If it may please the court, Joel M. Espinoza, number 29786, for the appellant, JEB Electric and Mid-Century Insurance Company.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, and the panel, the case before us today is a misapplication of CRS 842-1053B. The ALJ in the order on remand, despite there being a stipulation that 842-1053B was in effect, ignored that and applied the principle of sheltered employment. The panel below agreed that this was beyond the scope of the remand and did remove findings of fact and states that it removes the corresponding conclusions of law, but the conclusion of law number 7 appears not to have been removed, and that was the conclusion which awarded the benefit to claimant. 842-1053 was enacted by the General Assembly to terminate temporary total disability when one of the four prongs was met. In this case, it was prong B, 842-1053B, in which a claimant returns to regular or modified employment. It's an undisputed fact that claimant returned to work on November 29th, 2007. An important fact there is that the claimant returned to work in the same occupation in which the industrial injury had occurred, albeit with a subsequent employer.
Counsel, let me ask you a question about 3B, which is obviously the section that we're concerned with here. Is it implicit within that section that when the claimant returns to work, that he or she is actually physically capable of doing so?
Great question. Within that statute, it gives two situations. It says regular employment, modified employment. Regular employment would be where there would be no restrictions at all, issued by the authorized treating physician, which again is enumerated later on, which is a full duty release. So i.e. the regular employment depends on the individual. They go back to their regular job. A modified situation is where there are restrictions assigned by an authorized treating physician, and the position that they return to fits within those restrictions, or not necessarily, maybe what we have here in this case, where a claimant with restrictions returns to work of some kind. They don't necessarily have to return to the exact same job they were doing at the time of injury. It can be in another occupation.
But what if whether it's modified or regular, what if the claimant gets there and he just can't do it?
And that's what didn't happen in this case, was that the communication by the claimant to the authorized treating physician and the employer should be that I'm trying to work, these are my restrictions, I physically can't perform it. Then the employer and the authorized treating physician have the chance to modify the restrictions even further so that it may work out that the claimant can continue working, or in some situations it just, the employer cannot meet the accommodation.
So what, let me give you a hypothetical, and I know it's not the facts that we have here, but what if a guy goes back to work because he says I just have to economically, I can't exist on what I'm, and he goes back for one day and he can't do it. Same result?
As far as the result is reinstatement of temporary total disability benefits?
Well, no, you're saying that if you go back to work under 3B, your temporary benefits are terminated.
For that one day. If he goes back for that one day, and then if it shows that he cannot perform that position and that an inability to maintain that position, then the benefit does get reinstated.
So how is that different from this case, where you have a factual finding by the ALJ that was affirmed by the panel that says he couldn't do it?
Your Honor, under this situation where we had the termination for 5 months and then the claimant did not inform the authorized treating physician or the employer that he was physically unable to perform the position, that is where the ALJ went astray.
Where in the statute does it say that he has to inform the employer? I mean, I realize those are the facts here, but where was it in the statute does it say that?
The statute doesn't quite codify that. You are correct, Your Honor, but within, in the classical sense, modified positions, there is that communication between the injured worker, the employer, and the authorized treating physician. Here in this case, the claimant willfully withheld that, and the medical records contemporaneous to the time of when claimant resigned his position on May 2nd, 2008, and what he reported to Dr. Olson indicate that he was doing better at that time from the injection that he received on April 22nd, 2008. And then on May 5th, 2008, again, he states that he felt relief from the injection and that his ankle felt, it reminded him, to quote the record, of how it felt prior to the injury.
Counsel, I'll take you back to Judge Loeb's question. For lack of a better phrase, this trial work period where he goes back to modified employment, the hypothetical employee can't do it, and then his benefits are reinstated. Is that codified in the statute, and how long does this trial, can this trial work period last? Is it a month, 6 months? Do you have any idea?
Generally speaking, in looking at the statute and also the work comp rules of procedure, it doesn't state anywhere quite where a trial work under a temporary total disability situation that there be any amount of time. The only time that there is trial work is under vocational rehab under permanent total, and that is 3 months, and then they see if the position can be continued or not, but that's a slightly different situation.
So the statute doesn't limit this period to a day or a week or a month. It could go on for some unspecified amount of time?
It can go, benefits can be reinstated for either a trial work or in situations where they're terminated due to incarceration upon that event that triggered the termination ending, and then a showing under the case law of a worsening of condition, which we do not have here. And that is generally where it's codified, is in the cases dealing with 842-105-3B and City of Colorado Springs and its progeny, of where there's this proper termination of TTD for one of the four reasons, and then that situation ends, and then the claimant shows a diminished earning capacity at that point, which is what has been argued that was not proven by claimant, and then the benefits reinstated.
Thank you.
It's essentially TTD can be reinstated at any time prior to maximum medical improvement. At which there is really no time frame on that. Benefits can keep going, restart at any time.
Well, counsel, can you help me understand that, please? Because I'm reading subsection 3. First of all, I've read subsection 1, which said that temporary total disability payments shall cease upon the occurrence of any of the events in basically 3, subsection 3. So the subsection 3 says temporary total disability benefits shall continue until the first occurrence of any one of the following. So the first one, obviously, is reaching MMI, and the second is the employee returns to employment. So I'm having trouble understanding. You're talking about, you know, trial work periods and that can get reinstated and so forth. I'm having trouble figuring out how the statute squares with what you've been saying.
Sure. And Your Honor, when a claimant can be taken off MMI, they can be taken, they can reopen their case and TTD be reinstated. So the only time it appears that a case where TTD cannot be reinstated for a change in condition, diminished earning capacity, is when the case is closed by either final order or by full and final settlement.
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out how that then squares with the facts that we have here, because as I'm reading the statute, potentially anyway, once the first thing happens, either MMI or the gentleman goes back to work, then TTD is supposed to stop.
Correct.
All right. You're saying it can be, it can start again under certain circumstances, but those aren't mentioned in subsection 3?
Correct. It is in the case law that states that, and even under the termination statutes, that once TTD has ceased, that it is reinstated upon that worsening of condition, which was found not to have occurred in this case.
But we don't have a worsening here, so why does Section 4 apply at all?
Not applying Section 4, Your Honor, in the readings of the cases dealing with 842-105-3B, is that when once it is properly terminated, it is then incumbent upon the claimant to show that changing condition or diminished earning capacity to reinstate the benefit.
But aren't all those cases that you're talking about under Section 4?
Not all are under Section 4.
Well,
there are ones dealing specifically with 842-105-3B. Section 4, 842-105-4, that's dealing with the termination statutes. And so the salient fact in this case was that the benefit was reinstated on the findings of the dime, and in that dime, the claimant did not inform the physician that he had returned to work. So my client was not given the opportunity to properly terminate the benefit, and then at that point, it would have been incumbent upon the claimant to have the benefit reinstated. And that is where the ALJ errs in finding that was set aside of sheltered employment, because what the ALJ did was find that the benefit never ceased. And even though the panel agreed that that was an error, it appears that they did not properly apply the fact that the benefit had properly ceased. And that is why appellants request the court to look at this case under the progeny of cases under City of Colorado Springs, in which the benefit is properly terminated. And if there are no further questions, I will reserve for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. You got a little over 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Robert James, bar number 20587. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, who is the claimant in the case below. As Your Honors are well aware, the statute severely limits your ability to review decisions of the ALJ and also of the ICAO's ability to review fact findings of the ALJ. As you can tell from the opinion from the ICAO, they went through the record and determined that there were more than substantial evidence, more than the substantial evidence necessary to support the decisions of the ALJ below. What the appellant is basically doing here is arguing that they don't like the factual findings made by the ALJ.
Well,
I didn't want you to redo them.
Well, what I hear the appellant saying is, put aside the factual findings, the statute was improperly terminated, which is a legal question. So I guess my first question to you is, picking up on Judge Terry's question, is how do you get around the plain language of Section 3B?
There is no question that if the person goes back to work, that the benefits can be stopped. That happens all the time. Benefits are also restarted for many reasons, one of which is what happened here, where the person goes back to work and tries it and it doesn't work out. This is what is referred to now in workers' comp with Social Security as a failed work attempt.
There
isn't anything in the statute that says how long a failed work attempt can be.
Any Colorado case that you can point to with facts similar to ours, where the guy goes back to work, the temporary benefits are terminated, and then he asks for additional temporary benefits, and the court says, yes, you can get those?
Well, we cited some in our brief. I mean, obviously, the big one is from the Supreme Court, is Anderson versus Longmont Toyota.
But that's a Section 4 case.
You know, the reality is, however, is that all of these cases, even though they're using Section 4 and they're talking about whether or not the person was at fault, etc., all involve the issue of reinstatement of benefits, or they wouldn't have been in front of the court to begin with. TTD benefits are frequently reinstated in workers' comp. For instance, in this case, this gentleman, when he went back to this work and found this work on his own at Barnes, was awaiting a division independent medical exam. It is very often the case that TTD benefits have been stopped. The person has their division independent medical exam, and if that doctor says, in fact, that this person is not at maximum medical improvement, the TTD benefits are then reinstated while the medical care goes on.
That may in fact happen, but doesn't that essentially read out of the statute, Section 3B?
No, because, like I said, the reality is what these judges and, you know, the comp system is dealing with is a situation where people's health changes. Workers' comp decisions are almost never final as long as they're filed, or you can come back and reopen them at any time within 6 years. Because of the fact that people go back to work, they have flare-ups of their back condition when they go back, they have, you know, it's a continuous problem with workers' compensation, that even if you get a decision from a judge in comp, it is not res judicata in the normal sense that we deal with in other areas of the law.
I do understand that, counsel, and I have seen reopening cases, but as I understand it, this isn't a reopening case.
No, it's not specifically. I mean, because there is a provision for reopening, like once a case has been administratively closed. But in a sense, it is the same type of rule being applied here. This gentleman, first of all, this wasn't even modified work offered by the employer, which is what we usually run into. This gentleman, you know, went on his own to try and find work that he could do. The judge found it not to be the equivalent work, that it was much lighter work. That's a fact finding, and there's evidence in the record to back it up. He did do the job that he simply couldn't do it anymore. The reality is, if in fact the gentleman is going to be penalized for the fact that he had at least enough gumption to go out and try to find work, he didn't just sit home, okay? He would be punished. They're basically asking for him to be punished for going out and trying to find work. Because once he found the work, his TTD stopped. Well, see, first off, his TTD had already ended in any event, because they had found him, their doctor had found him to be at MMI. And that's the reason why he went back to work. He had been found to be at MMI. They were paying permanent partial disability benefits based upon what the treating physician had said was his disability. So he wasn't already even getting TTD before he found this job. And that's what the judge found, and what the gentleman explained. The reason he had even gone back to find the job was because he had basically been cut off and he had no income.
So I have a couple of related questions. What is the legal significance to the issues that we have to decide in this case of the apparently uncontested fact that your client didn't inform the employer or the doctors or anybody else that he had gone back to work? And second, what is the legal significance to the issues, if any, of the fact that you conceded that for the period of time that he was working for Barnes, he had to reimburse his original employer for that money?
As I have stated all along, including at the trial in front of the judge, I am not condoning the fact that my client did not inform everybody about what was going on.
I'm not concerned whether it was right or wrong. My concern is whether it has any legal effect or not.
Okay, I don't believe it does, other than we conceded at the hearing, and that the fact that if they had known that he was working, and if I had known that he was working, I would not have allowed him to accept any benefits during the period of time. All right. He was paid those TTD benefits. See, what happened, it was just unclear from the record, is he wasn't getting anything at all. He found this job and went back to work. When the Dime doctor saw him several months later and said that he was at MMI, they reinstated the TTD benefits and sent him a lump sum check and went back. That's where we argued that if I had known, for instance, I would not have let him to accept that check. All right. And we agreed when we went in there that, you know, what was right is right, and that they should have credit for that. Because if everybody had known all the facts, he would not have gotten that TTD for those weeks or months where he was actually working, making comparable wages to what he made before.
And that's because under the statute, those benefits are supposed to cease when he returns to work.
That is true, and we admitted that. And that's why we indicated that he should have credit, they should have credit for that, right, from the word go. I mean, although this is a statutory system and governed by statute, and equity as such doesn't, you know, necessarily apply, you know, there are rules of fairness. And in all fairness, we agreed that he should not have gotten that check.
So I guess, and again, picking up on where Judge Terry was in terms of her questions, where in the statute does it say that once that work for Barnes is over with, that the benefit, that the temporary benefits as opposed to permanent benefits can continue?
Again, the statute, I think, is silent on that issue. I mean, obviously, the workers' comp statute doesn't cover every factual situation.
Just to follow up on Judge Loeb's question, yeah. You referred earlier to the unsuccessful work attempt that's in the concept of Social Security law. That's well codified both in statute and in regulation. And those are the rules that govern that scenario. You're pointing to nothing in the statute or the regulations for this notion of an unsuccessful work attempt in workers' comp, right?
Yes, I would agree with you that there is nothing in the statute as such, but I would indicate that many of these cases we cited involve that type of situation where the individuals have, after a period of time, either gone back to work for their own employer at a, quote, modified employment job, and it hasn't worked out, or this is an unusual case in that he found the job himself, but I don't think that really has any legal significance, personally.
Are any of the cases that you are relying on Colorado Supreme Court cases?
No, most of them are Court of Appeals cases. Anderson versus Longmont Toyota, I believe, is the only Supreme Court case.
And that's a Section 4 case.
And yes, except that the same kind of rationale that, you know, they applied there is that the case can, you know, person can come back and get comp later on. And then they kind of infuse the Section 4 into there about fault. I mean, it's kind of an unusual situation where traditionally, fault had no role in workers' compensation whatsoever. I mean, I came from another state before I came here, and, you know, that was not part of it. And if you read Larson's treatise on workers' comp or whatever, fault is not something that is usually involved in workers' comp. It has sort of, you know, wormed its way into Colorado law, first by a few case law and then a few changes in the statute. So, you know, that's how the Supreme Court was dealing with the situation, was because that person wasn't at fault, you know, that the benefits could be reinstated. And that's really the same thing we have here. This gentleman didn't do, granted, he did something wrong by not telling people he went back to work, but he didn't do anything wrong in regards to his injury. And both the judge and the ICAO admitted that, you know, as a result of this severe injury that he has, he couldn't work, and that he didn't do anything to make it worse. You know, he tried to work, it didn't work out. So that's where the fault sort of comes in, and why they were saying is that this was not a volitional termination under the case law or their interpretation of the case law, because of the fact that he didn't really do anything wrong in that regards.
I know.
So as far as the return to work is concerned, you know, the fact that he didn't tell anybody about the return to work, I don't think legally has any real significance.
I know it's not before us on this appeal, but just how does the whole issue of going from temporary to permanent benefits play into all of this under the statute?
Well, once the, I don't know if I'm telling you something you already know, so bear with me, but the way the statute is set up, you get the temporary total benefits while you're off work and you're still actively being treated. The minute the doctors come to the conclusion that you have gotten to maximum medical improvement, where they've done as much as they can for you to actually improve your situation, that's a magical date under workers' compensation law, at which point the TTD benefits end under Section 3, and at that point, the physicians are supposed to do an impairment rating of the individual if they have a permanent thing, and then they get permanent partial disability benefits, which did happen here.
Okay.
We have that whole division independent medical exam procedure, which was invoked here, where all of that can change, you know, depending on what the division independent medical exam
is. I understand, which is why that really all we're dealing with here is that several month period until the claimant was put definitively at MMI.
Yes.
Okay.
And there, in fact, is further claims in this case that are pending but have been held in abeyance for permanent total disability as a result of the fact that the gentleman, you know, at least our argument is never going to be able to work again.
Right. And,
are coming back to the lower court.
I understand.
So that's, this really only involves that period of time between when he ended at Barnes on May 2nd and eventually the dime doctor also agreed that he was at MMI several months later.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And just as a policy issue, I would just indicate that, you know, this situation, again, as was indicated, there is no formal procedures or rules in regards to a return to work attempt and a failed return to work as there is in Social Security area and federal law and regulation. But the reality is here is that you simply don't want to encourage or discourage people from going back and trying to work. If people knew, and that's why they have the regulation in Social Security. In fact, if you're familiar with it, you can go back to work for 9 months and they don't cut you off in Social Security. They give you a trial work period for up to 9 months because they know that if in fact you discourage people from going out and finding work, that, you know, that's to nobody's benefit. That's not to the employer's benefit. It's not to the employee's benefit or society's benefit. And that's what would happen here. If you say that if an individual goes back, their TTD benefits end, bang, that day, never to be restarted again, even if they find they can't do that job, that's what would happen. And that's why the Social Security regulations take care of that particular issue.
I guess the thing that we're struggling with as an intermediate appellate court is we're not the legislature. And you may be making a wonderful policy argument, which we all agree with, but
I understand.
We're not across the street. And that's what we're struggling with, quite frankly.
I understand. And as I indicated, you know, there is Supreme Court case law, which there's nothing specifically that I could find or they think that he could find either that's specifically on this issue.
I understand.
Okay. But we're arguing beyond, I mean, maybe the argument has to be made to the Supreme Court rather than you. But the reality is, again, the statute, the workers' comp statute, although detailed, cannot cover every possible situation that's going to come in front of a judge. There's a lot of leeway in the system. And frankly, the law gives the administrative law judge a tremendous amount of power, far more than a judge has in district court. I mean, because the judge is your judge, jury, and fact finder. And there's a reason for that, is because the statute is a framework but doesn't cover every specific situation. And I think the judge and the ICAO here tried to deal with a unique situation and fit it into the confines of workers' comp law.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Mr. Espinoza, you've got a little over 3 minutes for any rebuttal you would like.
Thank you, Your Honor. The main fact that the court was asking counsel now was the significance of not telling the ATP, or one of the main facts, that negates this trial return to work, because the authorized treating physician was not working with the employer or the claimant in trying to find a position that did work. And the problem that arose in this case was the claimant, upon the non-finding of being not at MMI, requested temporary total disability back to the time that he was placed at MMI originally in September of 2007, converting the permanent partial disability benefit back to TTD, and then collecting temporary total disability for that time period in which he was working full wages for Barnes Electric.
For which you got reimbursed, though.
We have a credit. We have not seen a credit towards future benefits. And see, where the problem arises then, there, Your Honor, was that the benefit kept going and it wasn't properly terminated. And then even though the court found by stipulation that it did terminate at that time, when the ALJ did not properly apply 842.105.3b, she, in her order, she noted that the disability benefit never ceased, and it had properly ceased, and seeing that then at that point, when that it should have been incumbent upon the claimant to show why the benefit be reinstated. And the case law in analyzing 842.105.3b is very consistent that there has to be a change in condition that diminishes the earning capacity of the claimant. And as found and as argued by claimant, his condition was the same prior to working at Barnes, while working at Barnes, and after working at Barnes.
So, counsel, just so I can make sure I understand you, this whole framework for reinstatement of TTD and the rules, if there are any, surrounding it, come entirely from case law. There's nothing in the statute or the regulations that describe the parameters of this procedure, yet you're asserting that the procedure was violated here.
That is correct, Your Honor. That As far as, I mean, there are parts in the act which state on how a case can be reopened, and that it really goes to the reopening principles, that the an award can be reopened upon showing mutual mistake, fraud, or in this case, the what would be need to be shown a change in condition. So many times within the case decisions, when they're looking at different parts of the statute which aren't on point, they are looking at other parts to try and figure out how the act addresses these different situations.
Thank you.
So that it would go to that reopening principle. And with that, if there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your very helpful arguments. The case will stand submitted. The panel will issue an opinion in due course.